Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
Welcome in, everybody. It is Sports Daily. It is Albrecht and Kester. It is a Tuesday. It is a Tuesday following a Monday doubleheader sweep for the Kansas City Royals. It is a Tuesday. That means the countdown continues. Almost 1 week away from the start of the NFL regular season for the Kansas City Chiefs, taking on the Ravens in the opener. We will have a Royals guest, a Chiefs guest for you today. Kings of Kauffman, Mike Gillespie will join us, our new Royals insider, as we go down the stretch here. Perfect timing after yesterday. And Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, expected to join in the second hour as well. Lots of good stuff coming for you. We'll begin to look at some of the KU and K-State rumblings coming out of camp yesterday as well. We have two big giveaways for you today. We'll, of course, give away some HTO, as we always do. And then if you missed your opportunity yesterday, we'll give you another one today. I will do this each day this week to see Cody Jinks at Intrust Bank Arena. That's in late November, but you want to get your opportunity to win those tickets. So we'll do both of those things today. The IHOP hotline is open for you at 869-1240. It's brought to you by IHOP. Excited to bring back its all-you-can-eat pancakes deal through September 15th. Jad Chambers is there. You can also leave us your video comments, Facebook, YouTube, X, and of course, on 12 News Connected. Tommy, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Busy day. A lot to get to on the show today. I'm really excited about our guests that we have to talk a little Royals in the first hour with Mike Gillespie from Kings of Kauffman. And then in hour two, it's the first time that we'll have a chance to talk to Dan Israel in advance of the start of the regular season for the Kansas City Chiefs. So a lot to talk about today. Glad to be here.
It is going to be a fun program. If you're a Royals fan today, it's very interesting. There's a lot to unpack from yesterday in that doubleheader. Not just that the Royals were able to get two wins. That's the first and foremost great news. But we sat yesterday here talking about how difficult it was going to be for them if they didn't get the bullpen figured out. Well, they made some moves. Zerpa down, Will Smith to the IL. Those had been two of the biggest offenders, and they bring some young guys up. They bring up Alec Marsh. It was a day where Cole Reagans did not have his stuff, clearly. He actually left the game with an injury that they're calling a hamstring calf injury. Let's see what happens. We'll see if our Royals insider has any more insight. It looked to me like he couldn't grip the ball. I was terrified when they said he left the game with injury. So maybe good news there. Who knows? Maybe he just didn't have his stuff. But they come up with a way to win that game. Then Alec Marsh comes in the next game. Royals make a couple of errors early, and that's another one that could have unraveled on them, and they don't do it. And yesterday when we said, you know, relatively speaking, that part of the bullpen, that middle part of the bullpen, was time to panic, and the Royals must have had the same thought because they made some changes. In the first game, though, Tommy, it was the cast that we still expect good things from, right? MacArthur, although he was aided by a big-time MJ Melendez catcher, he probably would have had a pretty bad outing, but I think he stays in his handy just because his stuff is still good. Bubich gave you more than an inning, did give up a run, but he got his job done for the most part. Schreiber was good again in multi-inning use. Whew. Thank goodness he's back, and then Lucas Ursic does his thing. The second game, Tommy, was a little bit different, right? All these moves, and it was a Sam Long to Daniel Lynch, you know, three-inning Daniel Lynch save. That was a little uncharacteristic, but the bottom line is both of those games fit that profile that we were talking about yesterday of games the Royals were having a hard time winning, where it wasn't the starter goes six innings and then you hand it off to the end of the bullpen. Neither game saw that, and they won both of those games against the Guardians. That's about as good as you could have hoped for the Royals.
Yeah, it really was. And of course, it's been very well documented, the struggles in the bullpen, especially as of late. And, you know, some of those guys outside of the couple that you just mentioned, and they needed to lean on their bullpen in both games to win both games against the Guardians. And so if you would have asked me before the doubleheader started yesterday if the Royals would win both games of the doubleheader knowing that they were going to have to lean on their bullpen in both games, I would have told you were crazy. That would have never happened. And it did. They found a way to make it happen. You know, I think that it's important to note that with Cole Reagans, first and foremost, Matt Quatrero called it after the game, called him fine, said he was fine, had some leg cramping and that sort of thing with the heat and, you know, all of that. So, you know, that's Quatrero after the game. We'll see when the next turnaround, the rotation comes, if Reagans is good to go for that. But yeah, I mean, they had to make some moves in the bullpen. You know, I think that it was the right thing to do to move Zerpa down. I know Will Smith is now on the IL with back spasms. He hasn't looked right in a while. So that wasn't overly shocking to me. I think what was probably the biggest revelation with the bullpen yesterday out of both games is the 3-inning stretch from Daniel Lynch. You know, Daniel Lynch had been in the minors, and let's be real. I mean, totally honest here. In the brief outings that Daniel Lynch has had in the big leagues up to this point in his career, he hasn't been good. And so I wasn't expecting a whole lot from him, and I know it's one outing. But the fact that he comes in, is able to protect a lead, and I know that the Royals blew it wide open on Salvi's grand slam in the nightcap, right. And that's great. But he had to protect that lead over multiple innings. He goes 3 innings. And, you know, this is the first appearance that we've seen from him in the big leagues in a long time. That was probably, in my opinion at least, the most refreshing part of what we saw from the bullpen in both games.
I agree. I agree holistically, but it also preserves their bullpen. I loved the outing from Sam Long. I don't know if it's any more or less important than Long and Schreiber. I think what's happening, hopefully, is you're getting a collection now of Bubich, Schreiber, Long, Ursig, right? That gives you 4 now. Harvey might come back. It may be solving itself to some degree. I doubt Lynch stays up because Bubich kind of does the same thing for the Royals better than Lynch at this point. But maybe there's room for Lynch as the long man, I suppose. I'm most concerned about Reagans. Like, he's got to get back. And we'll talk to Mike Gillespie about this at Kings of Kauffman. I'm curious to get his take. I still think there's value in moving to a 6-man rotation for just a minute. We were talking before the show about some of the roster moves and the strategy. They sent Marsh down. I don't think that's unusual. He's got options, and he's worthless until the next turn in the rotation anyway. So while you're playing this stretch of games, it makes more sense to keep an extra reliever up. He could get called right back up if something is wrong with Reagans. But the bottom line is, Tommy, the starting pitching is not holding up at this point. And I don't know if extra rest can help. I mean, it's okay, right? Again, we're talking about a massive position of strength. Early in the season, they had to have the starting pitching be as good as it was. They probably don't now. You still want that by the time the postseason gets here, but you still got a month of baseball to play and a brutal schedule to play it. If we would have laid out these scenarios for you yesterday, we'd have never thought they'd win a doubleheader, let alone maybe even one of them. I mean, you go into like the rest of the series. I mean, money.
The way that they won it, I would have not, you know, predicted that they would have won both games of the doubleheader in the way in which they did, and with having to come from behind in both games, having to lean on your bullpen more. You know, when it comes to Alec Marsh, by the way, he was fine. He wasn't great.
Yeah, it was the errors.
He was fine, and look, that had been a knock on Alec Marsh the entire season, where he was either like pretty good or really good, or he was a disaster. And he wasn't either one of those things yesterday. And watching him, I kind of liked that. I kind of liked that it wasn't such a wild range of outcomes with Alec Marsh, right? Like, it was just something that, you know, he came in, he gave you almost 5 innings, 4 2/3. He gave up a couple of runs. You mentioned the errors, you know, that were uncharacteristic, I think, from the Royals defensively. But more than anything, it would get really nerve-wracking for me every time Alec Marsh pitched when he was in the regular rotation before he got sent down and they acquired Michael Lorenzen, because you never knew what you were going to get. And if he can, assuming that the Royals bring him back up at some point, if they do go to a six-man rotation or they utilize him to fill in from time to time, I would rather have a consistent fine Alec Marsh than never knowing exactly what kind of Alec Marsh you're going to get.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'd like him to always be good, I guess. But yes, consistency would be nice. Yeah. What we need for this team as much as anything is strength throughout the bullpen. The answer is not going to be, I don't think. I mean, I would love for it to be this, but I don't think it's going to be, oh, the starters all just bounce back and everything's back to normal. I think that's just highly unlikely. I mean, we have a large sample size now that these guys are not what they were at the beginning of the season, which is not surprising because, again, they're all reaching innings thresholds. Like, this is a new frontier for all of them. You have to learn how to do that. You have to learn how to be able to stretch it out over the course of a season, especially for almost all of these guys who have, to their credit, stepped up in a major way and provided something they've never done before. That's awesome. Now you got to figure out how to finish it. And so we'll see. We're going to take a break here so we can get things timed out for our first guest. We'll kind of go back-to-back guest a little bit today, but that's okay. We'll get much, much more on the Royals, including a look at the game tonight as we make our way through our Royals Insider. Mike Gillespie from the Kings of Kauffman blog will join us in just a little bit. Let's talk about some of the Chiefs' little moves. They made a couple of moves, I think, that we need to pay attention to, not just the Juju move yesterday as they're trying to tinker and get to their final roster. So we'll go through those. We are hoping to have Dan Israel on a little bit later, and hopefully he's feeling better, and we'll do that as well. It is a busy Tuesday. Your calls, your comments, always welcome. It's all Brockton Caster. We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
97.5 and 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Let's get our Cody Jinx giveaway going here. We'll switch them up, do this one hour number one today. In case you missed your opportunity yesterday, don't miss your chance to see Cody Jinx at Intrust Bank Arena on November 23rd. Just text the keyword Cody to the short code 20357. That's CODY to 20357. Message and data rates apply. Good luck, everybody. We'll do this through Friday. I love Cody Jinx. I think it'll be a great show. Jad described it well yesterday. Outlaw country is a good way to describe Cody Jinx. Certainly, I don't think he's somebody that's on mainstream radio, but he's awesome. I think he's got some really good songs, including one of my favorites. So good luck, everybody. Tommy, the Chiefs made some moves yesterday that are moderately impactful, we'll call it. You know, the Juju's Smith-Schuster move, I think, could be impactful. Then they make a trade with the Cardinals for a defensive lineman, trade a seventh-round pick. Okay. I think that's, you know, I now that we've seen the following move today, that it is Charles Omenihue is going to remain on the PUP list, I think that's why they made that move, which is probably less of an indictment on Felix Anudike-Uzomah, which is sort of where I was concerned last night, but now that we see Omenihue going on the PUP, that's why they made that move. They're just tinkering, you know, just tinkering a little bit, but you know, they're moves that we need to pay attention to.
Yeah, I think it can be both. I think that it's also a little bit of an indictment on Felix Anudike-Uzomah. Not that it's, you know, they're not convinced that he can play at all, but you know, they need some reinforcements behind him. And I understand Charles Omenihue probably not returning until, I think they're speculating, sometime in the month of November has been basically all the reporting that I've seen. And for sure, he won't be eligible to come back, at least for the first handful of games, best case scenario, now that he's going to be kept on the PUP list. So yeah, they need reinforcements. That's why they traded, you know, for Cam Thomas to come in and be a linebacker for them and provide some additional depth. I think that they would feel a little bit more confident about their overall linebacker core if Felix Anudike-Uzomah had shown a little bit more and had kind of taken that step forward and shown that improvement. There's been quite a bit of talk throughout the preseason that he really hasn't taken that step forward that you would expect to see from a former first-round pick. Can he be impactful in the NFL? Sure. I think that he can still be somebody that, you know, comes in and you know, does a good job overall. But I do think that they have decided, the Chiefs have decided that they need a little bit more help at linebacker. And being able to come in and make an acquisition like that again, I think it also shows me they're not fully content with who they currently had on that roster.
Yeah, obviously, I guess is the right answer, or they're just tinkering because they can tinker. It's all fine. I don't know what's going to happen with the pass rush. I don't think yesterday's move is going to blow us away, and all of a sudden we think, oh, there it is. That's the missing piece there. It seems like a depth piece. I think really a Minshew was the best option, or Felix Anudike-Uzomah, it clicks for him and he's able to make it happen. It does add a little bit of pressure early, because we don't know what to expect in the secondary as well. I would imagine we get lots of blitzing early from Steve Spagnuolo, and because he's returned so much, I don't think that's a problem this year. Like, for the most part, everybody's already up to speed on his system, which is something he hasn't always had in his back pocket, so that'll help too. Man, you come right out of the gates and you're taking on the Ravens? That's a tough assignment anyway, because you don't get normal pass pressure on, you know, Lamar Jackson. But now, not only that, but you got to stop Derrick Henry, who will be as fresh as he is all year, who has been a thorn in the Chiefs' side. The Ravens are going to be tough, man. I'm very curious, and I'm sure there is an early line on this game. I haven't looked at it. I'm sure it's like 3 points, but that is an interesting one to think about. The Chiefs could lose an opener. They lost their opener last year. It's not that big a deal, but that's a pretty tough assignment there against the Ravens right now.
Yeah, you know, they obviously like George Karloftis a lot and what brought to the table, but I think that it's, you know, clearly on the other side of the line, the defensive line, to be able to get, you know, some help there on the edge. And that, you know, that's why they bring in Cam Thomas to an extent. Now, again, I think that's going to provide some additional depth as potentially a backup player. But one of the things that Felix Anudike-Uzomah has struggled with early on in his tenure in Kansas City has been defending the run. You mentioned week number one, they play the Ravens, who acquired Derrick Henry. And so right out of the gate, you would think he's going to get tested pretty quickly. You know, the Ravens, I think, are going to know that if they're going to give the ball to Derrick Henry, that, you know, where to run him, where it's the weakest on the line for Kansas City's defense. And that's Felix Anudike-Uzomah right now. And so it's going to be a tough test, a tall test for him right out of the gates in week number one, taking on this already dynamic Ravens offense. You've got to try to contain Lamar Jackson, and then you've got that added wrinkle now with Derrick Henry. It's going to be a tough challenge from week number one.
I don't know that it's been Derrick Henry. As we look back down the road at the most impactful offseason's moves made, and we won't see it in this game, I think Hollywood Brown has a chance to be in that car. Derrick Henry, if things go well for the Ravens, Derrick Henry will be like an all-time move, because if he still has gas in the tank, like, it's a perfect addition. Pressure is on now for the Chiefs. They've got all kinds of things, but, you know, Leo Chenal, he's being asked to step up into a bigger role. Pressure's on. Nick Bolton, Drew Tranquil. Like, they let some players go. Like, the test is across the board. We've got somebody asking us, this is a funny question for us specifically, because we're all over the map on this. We'll talk, hopefully, if Dan Israel is able to join us today, we'll get his take on this. But do we think Kadarius Toney will make the team? I am probably about 50-50. Tommy is a more definitive no. My problem is I don't know if he's got such a clearly defined role, the fan, that I think it's more about a decision on whether they want that role on the team. I don't think he factors in as much to like a stacking of the wide receivers as far as, like, I don't think Juju impacts Toney much. I think Juju impacts the other guys. I think if they keep Toney, it's just because they want they want those few wrinkles that they had designed for him anyway. So we'll see. That's coming later this week, but we'll talk more about all this, all the Chiefs moves, all these things, hopefully with Dan Israel at the top of the hour. Let's take another break here. Good luck on that giveaway. By the way, that football talk, presented by T-Mobile. Switch to T-Mobile and you can get tons of benefits. Still save on every plan versus AT&T and Verizon. Use their savings calculator to find out how at T-Mobile.com/switch. Up next, for the first time, our new Royals insider, Michael Espy, will join us from the Kings of Kauffman block. We're excited to bring that in, and we will do it next. The Royals sweep a doubleheader, trying to make up more ground on the Guardians tonight. Stick around. Sports Daily coming right back.
...97.5 and 1240 KFH.
All right, welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily, Jacob Albrock, Tommy Caster, joining us right now on our video stream. And for everybody, for the first time, Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman. You probably know the X handle if you're there. It's Kings of Kauffman.com. It's fan-sided Royals site. We're so excited to get Mike Gillespie in. You can follow him on X at Mike Gillespie, G-I-L-L-S-B-J-D. You can follow the Kings of Kauffman there as well. Mike, welcome into Sports Daily for the first time. How are you?
Pretty good, gentlemen. Glad to be here. How are you this morning?
We're good. I mean, it's better when the Royals take a doubleheader the way they did yesterday. It's funny, Mike. We yesterday, relatively speaking, you know, said it's time for changes in the middle of that bullpen. The soft belly of the bullpen is not allowing the Royals to do one of the things that they do really well, which is come back late in the game. Well, they go into a doubleheader and they get a Cole Reagans not good start and potential injury, which we'll get to. They get a couple errors and a chance for a game to unravel on Alec Marsh. But then we maybe see a little strength in the bullpen on a day against the team, you know, that they got to beat. That was exactly what the doctor ordered.
Well, I agree. And frankly, it surprised me. The Royals have struggled with that bullpen all season. We've written about it till we're almost tired of writing about it. But yesterday, you know, these guys, like you say, they came through when they needed to. They give up one run in over 9.1 innings, spread over two games. And I don't recall the last time this bullpen was that good. It's one of those things that they've got to have down the stretch now. They can't afford a bullpen collapse. They're a game out of first in the Central, and they've got a great 6.5 game over lead over Boston for that third wild card. And they've done it in spite of the bullpen, frankly. I've been hard on the bullpen all year. I'll probably be hard on them down the stretch, but that was really good to see yesterday. That was refreshing, as you said.
You know, Mike, I mentioned at the top of the show that for me, the most refreshing pitcher out of the bullpen was somebody that I never expected, and that's Daniel Lynch coming up. You know, he's had limited time in the big leagues, and frankly, when he's been with the big league club, he hasn't been very good. But last night, pitched three innings in relief, pretty much a clean three innings, had a little bit of issues here and there, but overall, the Royals had to have him. Do you anticipate a guy like Daniel Lynch being a contributor maybe in the bullpen or in whatever role in this pitching staff down the stretch?
Well, you know, he was really stellar down in Omaha for the last couple of months, but he was starting. And I think in the grand scheme of things, if the Royals were in a perfect world, they'd really like to have him in the rotation. But right now, I think he's best out of the pen. Is he going to come out and throw three scoreless innings and get a save like he did yesterday? Hopefully, but probably not. But I think he could be solid. He's got the stuff to be solid. But right now, barring, you know, an injury in that rotation, I think you're going to see Quatrero use him almost exclusively out of the pen, and who knows where. He's capable of pitching in any spot out of the pen.
It's interesting, too, Mike Gillespie joining us, Kings of Kauffman. I think it matters now. It won't matter later either, which is something, you know, bullpen shrink if the Royals reach the postseason. These things aren't going to be a problem, but you got to get there. One of the things that I am pondering is an idea. The starting pitching clearly is gassed. They're not as good as they were, which is, you know, that would have been an unreasonable expectation anyway, but almost all of them feel gassed to me. I have wondered with when you've got Lynch and not Lynch, but when you've got Marsh there, hell, maybe when you've got Lynch there, what if the Royals go to a six-man rotation just down the stretch here to get a little extra rest for these starters? I don't know if anybody is asking that. I don't know if Quatero's considering it, but I mean, it just is pretty obvious that these guys are at a threshold now they're not comfortable with. And I don't know what you do to get them ready for the postseason, but at the same time, realize you still got to get there.
Well, you know, I share that concern. The rotation is, you know, is where it is. And one of the reasons I think they are showing signs of being gassed is because the Royals have allowed those starters to pitch deeper into games than they're used to. I mean, it's nothing to see these guys throw 100 pitches anymore. As far as a six-man rotation goes, they've got a day off a week at least for the rest of the season, usually on the Thursdays. I'd be surprised if they go to a six-man, again, barring an injury or someone really getting gassed, because I think Quatrero is a guy who, you know, if it isn't completely broken, he sees no need to fix it. But you're right, they've got Lynch there. They can recall Marsh at any time. You know, because he was the 27th man yesterday, he had, by rule, he had to be returned to Omaha after the game. So, yeah, they've got options. And the rotation is one of the two things I think the Royals have to keep intact and going well down the stretch, or they're not going to make the playoffs. The other thing is Bobby Witt. You know, he can't go into a slump.
Yeah, there's no doubt about that, Mike. And speaking of Bobby Witt and the lineup, for such a long time, it was, you know, kind of a top-heavy lineup. I mean, you had Witt, you had Pascantino, you had Perez. And then outside of that, there just really wasn't any production elsewhere. It's gotten a little bit more spread out. Obviously, those top three guys, you know, are still the ones that drive the bus, you know, pretty much each and every night. But, you know, specifically yesterday, you see Michael Garcia have a really good game. Actually, Garrett Hampson hit the ball pretty well. It had been a while since we had seen that from him. He had been in a prolonged slump for quite a while. And MJ Melendez, it looks like, is, you know, maybe starting to come around too a little bit. What are you seeing from some of those supplemental pieces in the lineup where it doesn't always have to be one of those main three stars that the Royals have had to lean on for so long?
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned MJ, because, you know, I've been an MJ fan for a long time, and I just wrote a story about him Sunday night, and this, I don't want to call a resurgence of his hitting ability, because he, you know, he hits home runs, but he doesn't get on base a lot in his career so far. But he, like you say, he's really coming around. The other guy that I keep an eye on is Paul DeJong. You talk about an out of the blue trade deadline acquisition. That was him. And, you know, he brings a lot of power, and I think Quatrero kind of likes him in the lineup. He gets some nice things done at the plate. He's adequate with a glove. And, you know, he's got reverse splits, which makes, you know, platooning him kind of different. But I think those two guys are really worth keeping an eye on down the stretch.
Mike Gillespie joining us, kingsofkauffman.com, Kings of Kauffman on social, following the Royals in this magical, we'll call it, season that I don't know that anybody saw coming. Jason has a question for you, Mike, on YouTube, kind of a logistics type question. Hunter Renfroe, what is the stat? You think that's a brief stay? You think it's a long stay on the IL there? Or how quickly, because he has become a big part of the offense, how quickly did the Royals expect to get him back?
Well, you know, he's on the 10-day list, which the non-pitchers have to go on initially unless they put him on the 60. The Royals are talking pretty optimistically about Renfroe. You know, I've been following those guys for decades. And the one thing, when they talk about injuries, if they think it's serious, they tend to be a little reserved. But when it's serious, they don't come out and say things like, hey, this is going to be a short stay. He's going to be back. So, yeah, I think he'll be back at the end of that period. You know, they might mix him in kind of slowly to begin with. But he's a guy they need, and I think he'll be back pretty soon.
Mike, I know that it's really almost sounds like a broken record to talk about all of the superlatives when we're discussing Salvador Perez and just what he has brought to the organization in all the various ways throughout his tenure in Kansas City. But specifically, you know, yesterday was just a phenomenal day for him, especially last night, that grand slam that busted the score wide open against the Guardians. And, you know, it's great because he's somebody that, you know, as we all know, was a part of the last championship team. He doesn't have, you know, decades left on this roster. And so it almost feels like to me that there's this energy with the other members of the team. It's like, we're going to get Salvi back to the playoffs. Like that's our goal. We're going to do this for him. And I know it's, you know, probably really easy to say how great he is, but what have you seen from him specifically throughout the course of this season with his game in the clubhouse, otherwise, as far as kind of galvanizing this team?
Well, you know, that's the role he's had to play the last few years. And this year, he's doing that same thing, that galvanizing. He's got a little help from Bobby, who's, you know, become a leader at such an early stage in his career. But, you know, Perez just loves the game. And I think, you know, I'm not in that clubhouse, but I think that's just infectious.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a Kansas City Star had a nice story this morning about, you know, what you just said, Tommy, that they want to get to the playoffs for Salvi. And I think that's a huge factor. When your teammates talk that way about you, they're on his back, you know, he and Bobby. And, you know, it's one of the, I was just thinking about this last night after that second game. You look at the Royals and their history of long-term contracts. You know, they had the best of intentions with Danny Duffy's and the best of intentions with Alex Gordon. And those deals didn't pan out. I was a little skeptical when they gave Salvi 4 years at $85 million. But that's a long-term contract that's worked out. I mean, he's done everything they want. The big thing they're doing with him now is they're playing him at first and DH more, and I think that's really, really helping him physically.
He's a Hall of Famer. I think, Mike, I've been in that camp for 2 or 3 years, but he will challenge some things. He, to me, has the same sort of DNA that we have seen from – some of these guys who just love it so much that they can remain in the game just sort of as sluggers. I mean, we saw Vladimir Guerrero do that late in his career. We saw Adrian Beltre do that, although he remained a great defender. But, you know, Nelson Cruz did that for a long time. I think there's a place for him for a while, at minimum at DH as he continues to age. I don't know if he's become a better hitter late in his years, but it sure feels like he hasn't lost anything at the plate if he hasn't gotten better. I think he's become a better power hitter as he ages, and I don't know that that's just going to stop. Like, you know, some people think he's coming down to the end of the career. I don't know that there's anybody that loves baseball more. I think he's got plenty left in the tank to keep going for a while.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, the really overlooked stat, offensive stat with Perez is, you know, he's got an on-base percentage in excess of .340. You know, that's unheard of from Salvador Perez. And even though he reverts now and then, we don't see him chasing those low and away pitches in the dirt like he used to. He does it now and then, but it's not as chronic as it used to be. And I, you know, if I'm Salvi Perez and Matt Cotrero, I'm also thanking Freddie Fermin. That guy is a fantastic catcher. Everybody and he's the one, you know, that enables Cotrero to move Salvi around more than the Royals ever have.
One last thing for you, Mike Gillespie, Kings of Kauffman. Cole Reagans leaves his start yesterday. You mentioned they don't usually say things like he's fine, which is sort of what they said after that. I was concerned when he came out of the game. I didn't expect hamstring. Do you believe them? Is it just a hamstring cramp type thing, or was there something going on? It looked like to me he couldn't grip the ball right.
He didn't look good from the beginning yesterday. And, you know, they say leg cramps. I'm not going to doubt that. But my question is there a little more going on, just as you say, because you look at some of his tendencies from yesterday. His fastball and slider velocities were down. Now that he said after the game that, you know, I'm not in my legs, my leg work wasn't good. And of course that can contribute to those lower velos, but you know, I think they're going to have to keep an eye on him. Whether he's going to miss a start, I don't know, but if he comes out in his next start, which will be against the Astros, and is struggling again, they're going to have to take a pretty hard look at him.
KingsofKauffman.com. Mike, I see you've got more on Salvi there and more on the doubleheader split. Take a second here. It's the first time we've had you in, and we really appreciate it, of what people can expect from you guys at Kings of Kauffman.
Well, you know, it's an interesting time for us. I went on the site in 2019. This is the first year that the Royals have been good.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a little different for us coverage-wise. You know, all the writers everywhere writing about the same thing. We try to give a little fresh perspective. We just don't report what's happening. You see a lot of opinion and analysis from us, and that's what people can expect from us down the stretch here. We're gonna take a close look at the games, close look at what's going on with the guys, and as always, give our opinions.
Well, it's been,
we're looking forward to it.
Been about like a decade for us too, since we're in August, late August, talking Royals. So we love it too. Royals insider Mike Gillespie joining us. Kings of Kauffman, give him a follow on X. Check out the work there at the website as well. Mike, we appreciate it, and thanks for stopping by. Let's do it again next week.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks, guys.
There goes Mike Gillespie. Check it out. We're all having fun with the Royals now. It is August 27th, Tommy, and it is Royals talk, and that is fantastic. And I have heard, look, I've heard from people, I have friends, and I hear this a lot, actually, like, man, it's been a while since we've really followed along with the Royals. You know, baseball giveth, baseball taketh away. It's not fun to follow bad teams, but man, when you've got a good team, it's the best bandwagon sport. There's no question about that. And I don't mean that negatively. I mean that in the most positive way possible. It is fun to get on board with a good baseball team.
It really is. It's been a while since I've been to a Royals game. I tried to go as often as I can. You know, schedule-wise, it's tough. I know you went just recently. But the last game that I went to was two seasons ago. It was right about the time you and I started doing Sports Daily together. And it was I remember specifically, it was a makeup game from a rainout against the White Sox. It was a Monday afternoon game after school was already back in session. I think the game started at like, you know, 2 o'clock. And it was, I'm not kidding you, the lowest attended game, I think, in 30 some years for the Royals. There were maybe a couple thousand people there. Then that was basically it. So yeah, it's been a minute since I've been there, and that was the last one. I know I'm going to go to a game in September with my wife, and I'm super excited. It's going to be a significantly different atmosphere than the last time I made it up to a game.
So here's what's fun for me. We went to that Royals game. My son, like, I cannot believe he still had a voice. I've told you he's going to be a rock and roll front man. Like, Get Loud is all he wanted to do. And scream and dance. And in fact, we went to a Wind Surge game afterward for our, you know, for our all ball. And at that game after, for that charity event, he's like, do they have a Get Loud? And I was like, they'll have a Get Loud, buddy. And they had a Get Loud with a prize for like a free slice of Picasso's pizza. And so they were nearby. And I'm not kidding. Like, everyone just like turned around and looked at him, just like, rah, like, right. And he won. He got a free slice.
Good.
But what's been really cool about it is, since we've gone, like, every night, you know, used to be you'd get groans of like, oh, we had to watch baseball again. He's like, Dad, can we just stay up like 10 more minutes and watch you know, now he knows it's the Royals. For a minute there, he was confused whether it was the Royals or the Rangers. He doesn't really care, but he just wants to watch baseball. Like, he's like, can we just watch baseball for 10 minutes? I'm like, oh, yes. Like, the lights are going off. Yes, we can. Don't tell mom. We'll stay up all night. But yeah, no, it's been really cool. And here we go. Royals back in action. They go tonight, 5:30. House money a little bit. We'll talk about this in the second hour. It's house money now. Like, I feel like they got two wins that I didn't expect them to get when we consider the circumstances. And now you've got a chance to do real damage against Cleveland. If you can just take one of the next two, take two of the next two, that'd be great. But it does feel house money-ish. There is no outcome where you won't come out of this and think, yeah, that was a success. I mean, you split on the road with Cleveland.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that Royals fans everywhere and probably even the team to an extent can exhale a little bit going into tonight's game. Now, of course, you want to be able to gain more ground on the Guardians, and you win today. All of a sudden, you know, you're right there and you've got the opportunity to take first place in the AL Central, which is just wild to think about. But at the same time, at least you're guaranteed, worst case scenario, by the time this series wraps up, to not have lost any ground against the Guardians. Of course, we're getting to a point now where, I mean, it's head-to-head matchups. We're getting late into the season. Sure. You've got to try to make up that ground. But worst case scenario, at least we're not talking about the Royals being even further behind.
And they feel a little vulnerable, too, at the moment, that you don't want to lose sight of either. I mean, you definitely want to win one of the next two. Maybe we'll be disappointed. I mean, talk to us on Thursday if we're disappointed that they couldn't get it done. But I think that we'll feel fine. And we'll get into the specifics tonight and all of those types of things as we continue. We are hoping Dan Israel will join us at the top of the next hour. Dan has had an interesting couple of weeks, but hoping to talk a little Chiefs with Dan. We'll talk a little Chiefs one way or the other. It's Sports Daily. You've got your Cody Jinx giveaway set up right now. All you got to do is text Cody, C-O-D-Y. 20357. That is our first hour giveaway. We'll give away some HTO in the second hour, so stay tuned for that opportunity as well. All this Royals talk, by the way, Royals baseball is available for free on KFH and on the Odyssey app. Tune into KFH at noon yesterday, so you had the double header. So today, you can get it starting at 5:30 right there on the Odyssey app. Just search KFH and we'll have it for you. Hour number two of Sports Daily coming right up.
Now, from Wichita's most listened to sports radio, 97.5 and 1240 KFH, this is Sports Daily with Jacob Albrecht and Tommy Kester.
All right, welcome in, everybody. Hour number two on the program. Glad to be with you. Glad to be with Dan Israel for the first time as we get ready for the new season. Dan, hope you're feeling well today.
I am. Good morning.
It is Chiefs season here, Dan, and like no rest for the weary. All of a sudden we think, okay, training camp's over, preseason's over, all good, yeah. And then a flurry of roster moves to sort of evaluate as the Chiefs add Cam Thomas, an edge rusher from Arizona. We get the news today that Charles Omenihue is going to be on the PUP list to start the season. How concerned are you, Dan, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network, by the way, how concerned are you about that other side of Karlaftis and the pass rush for the Chiefs early in this season?
Well, you know, I think you can never have enough edge rushing, right? I mean, it's just one of those things, and they were depending on Omenihue to fill that role. And I think with the absence of him for the first half of the season, which is unfortunate, but, you know, these types of injuries, they heal at the rate they heal, right? So I think they go out and they get Cam Thomas, who's really a versatile guy on the edge. He's a big guy. He's a proven guy. I just think it's important to have pressure from any side, from all sides, all at the same time. I think that's one of the things that made the secondary of the Chiefs so good last year was the amount of pressure that they got up front.
Do you think, Dan, that the acquisition of Cam Thomas has much to do with the development of Felix Anudike Uzomah and what the Chiefs see in him and kind of the impact that they think he can make? Or is it more simply because of Omenihue and just having additional depth?
You know, Tommy, it's definitely both, but I think anytime they have the opportunity to bring in a veteran, they depend on that. That locker room is really set up. The design, the architecture from Andy Reid is that the veterans run the locker room. And so for them to bring in a veteran of the likes of Cam Thomas, I think that that role is definitely expected out of him. And I think that one of the things you saw, you know, with George Karloftis was the development, whether it was, you know, from guys that he was around, and now he's kind of become that veteran presence. So, yeah, I think I think they both play a factor, but I definitely think the tutelage that's going to take place there is significant.
Dan, way back before we saw training camp, or maybe it was the first couple of days of training camp, Mitch said something to us here that surprised me. And I wonder if you feel or felt the same way and still do. He thought that the Chiefs defense had a chance to be better than it was a year ago. It surprised me because I have gone into this season with the thought that it's not going to be as good, but the offense will be way better. Where do you sit with that, this year's defense versus last year's as a whole?
You know, I think that was the biggest surprise to me, Jacob, out of training camp, was that I expected the loss of Snead to really take the defense down a couple of notches. And I think it's a bold prediction to say they're going to be better because they were so good last year. I definitely don't see them being less than what they were last year. And frankly, I'd be happy if they're as good as they were last year, because I just think they were outstanding in so many games. But the combination of the Chiefs defense not falling backwards and the offense improving so much, because it was a dramatic improvement at camp this year from even last year's camp or last year's season, or even last year's postseason, which I think we would all agree was incredible. I think the Chiefs offense is a step forward. So it really is stunning when you look at this team. The team overall, in my opinion, is indeed better than the team that won Super Bowl 58, which is says a whole lot about trying to obtain this three-peat.
Dan, of course, the other major acquisition news over the last 48 hours, Juju Smith-Schuster returns to the Chiefs in that wide receiver room. And, of course, he's got familiarity with the offense. He's built a significant amount of trust with Patrick Mahomes when he was with the team a couple of seasons ago. I think that one thing that I'm most excited about having Juju back on the roster is that the role that he can fill, where all of the responsibility or a lot of the responsibility is not on his shoulders like it was two seasons ago. I think that lends itself to having quite a bit of success, albeit in a different kind of role for Juju this season.
No, absolutely. When you think about how other teams defend you, they put Juju in the box and they just hold him there. And what else has Mahomes got? Well, this year he's got a lot. He's got Rashee Rice. You know, eventually we're going to get Hollywood Brown back. And so I really think that, you know, the addition of Juju, I think he'll be better this go around with the Chiefs than he possibly was in his first go around with the Chiefs. I also think it's interesting. People are kind of saying, you know, well, Juju's an old receiver. He's kind of washed. He's 27 years old, man. I mean, that's not that old. So I think it'd be so fun to see these guys out on the field. There was such a dramatic improvement with Worthy and Brown and Rice at camp with the speed of the wide receiver being able to peel the top off of defense, something we haven't had since Tyreek. I mean, let's face it, it hasn't been here since Tyreek Hill was here, and now we've got it in triple. You know, so adding Juju in there, I think a guy who runs clean routes, which is, you know, sometimes it's hard to see as a fan, the route running. If you watch warmups, you can tell when a route is supposed to bend. If you know, 6 of the 10 guys run a route to the 20-yard line, bend it straight across the 20-yard line, and the other guys kind of fade, and then one guy's under, one guy's over, he's 3 yards behind. Those aren't clean routes, and so you have those issues with receivers, no matter how fast they are or how good they might look with their hands. If they don't run clean routes, it doesn't work. Mahomes depends on that. And I think that's something Juju Smith-Schuster was really, really good at. So I'm excited to see it. I think it's a guy who, you know, at very best, he'll play a role in this box. Now, who will it be at the sacrifice of? Does this mean they're going to move on from Sky Moore or, you know, so many of the receivers that are Kadarius Toney, they're kind of on the fence here. There's a price to pay because you can only keep so many receivers, but I love the addition of him, man. I can't wait to see it because I really feel like this wide receiver room may be as good as any of the three Super Bowl winning teams.
I agree with that. And Juju, if he's not explosive like the others, he catches the ball, which may sound fundamental, but if you remember a year ago, if first down, it's third and six, there's a decent chance you see Juju on the field, I would imagine. So you brought up a good point. Dan Israel joining us, our Chiefs insider, Chiefs Radio Network executive producer. We're a little more than a week away from the start of this season. The curious case of Kadarius Toney. I am predicting that Juju won't affect Toney. I think they're looking at Toney as a separate thing. They'll keep him if they want his gadget, if they want his versatility, all that in there, or they won't. Regardless of Juju, he kind of feels like a separate thing to me. They'll either keep him because they want his wrinkle in, or they won't, no matter who else is on the roster. I don't even know, like, do you even stack him up against these other guys, or is it just sort of a decision on what it is that he does well? And I know that Chiefs fans may shake their head at that, but you know, they've talked about it for 2 years. They like what he does well when he does it well.
Yeah. Right.
Do you keep him for that reason only, or do you just feel like you have enough and move on from it?
You know, Jacob, it's interesting because, and let me just preface, man, at this point, Veach's track record, I just feel almost foolish second guessing whatever he does. But I think it's interesting. They love the athleticism of Toney. They really feel like he's one of the most athletic guys on the team. The problem is he can't bring it all together. You know, I don't want to say he's a head case, but he's a little in his head, and that prevents him from achieving some of the things mentally, achieving some of the things that he can do physically. And so I think it's a matter of time on whether or not they will continue to wait out straightening that problem out, because I've heard time and time again, he's the most athletic guy on the 53 man, you know, and he might be. I mean, we've seen flashes of that, but unless you can count on it, I think where it gets dangerous for Toney this year is he's not the only guy in that room that's athletic. Right. There is a lot more athleticism in there, and there is a lot more, there's a lot more experience. There's a lot more talent in that room than there has been previously. So the pressure's really on Toney. I don't know if he's done enough to show them, you know, that he's out of this kind of situation and that he's finally growing into those shoes or not. And I think that's going to be interesting to see what Veach chooses in that, because it is kind of a, I know they expect, or they had high expectations for Toney, and it's just never come about.
Dan, one of the most fun storylines during training camp and preseason has been the emergence of Carson Steele and what he can bring to the offense for Kansas City. And, you know, I think pretty much it's a given at this point that he's secured a place on the 53-man roster going into the season. And that was an area, running back, that I felt like was sort of not really being discussed nearly as much as what was going to happen at wide receiver during the offseason for the Chiefs. Because outside of Isaiah Pacheco, there were just a lot of question marks. Would it be Clyde Edwards-Helaire being able to contribute at all? Would Denaric Prince find a way onto the active roster? I didn't have Carson Steele on my radar at all until he burst onto the scene. What do you think a guy like Carson Steele can bring offensively, whether it's blocking, whether it's running the football as a fullback or even as a tailback? What does he bring to this Chiefs offense and the roster as a whole?
Well, you know, I think one of the things you got to give Veach credit for is never, I mean, he looks beyond the draft and talent, and here's a guy that 32 teams passed up on in the draft, and he went out, signed him, and he's going to make the 53-man roster. And I think he's going to make the 53-man roster because of his character, his running ability, and his size. He can play that kind of fullback role, which the Chiefs haven't had since the Sausage. And I think, you know, I think it's important that they have – look, the way Pacheco runs, man, He can't carry a full load like that.
Yeah.
And so he's got to have somebody behind him, whether that's Hilaire, whether Edwards Hilaire, whether that's, you know, whoever. Steele kind of fills this role because I think they have very similar running styles. I mean, how many times have you seen a Chiefs running back stiff arm a guy to the ground on his way to the end zone? I mean, Steele has demonstrated a lot here in the preseason. I wouldn't say many gave him much hope in camp. He just wasn't, you know, emerging out. And then he kind of started to shine there at the end. And then he got in these games and it was like, whoa, this kid can play. And so I think, you know, it's incredibly important that you have that character, that toughness as a running back in the running back room, the way our running backs are. And I think that they found this guy. And I think it's amazing that nobody grabbed him before this, because obviously he can play. And the way he runs, it's like, how did we not see this? Even we didn't take him in the draft, right? So, but it's such a great story. And I think that in part that kind of, you know how that fuels certain players. You saw that with Warren Moon not being drafted. You saw that with, you know, a number of players, you know, where guys just, you know, teams didn't believe in a player. And a player said, you know what? If you don't believe in me, I'm going to prove it to you. I'm going to go above and beyond what I've shown so far. And I think Steele's an example of that. And so I'm excited. It looks like he's going to make the roster. I'm excited to see how they use him, whether it'll be combination of fullbacks carrying the ball. When's the last time we had a fullback carry the ball? It isn't very common, right? Or they shift him around and they've got him catching from, you know, the flat. Or it's just he's a versatile guy, and I think he fits the Chiefs game plan very well. That creative kind of, we don't rely, you know, we pass the ball to run, right? As opposed to running the ball to pass. And so I think for the Chiefs, he's a perfect fit in there as a second, as a fullback, and as a guy with high character and intensity.
Look, if people think it's crazy that he could have that sort of role, I would invite you to look at Isaiah Pacheco.
Yeah, right.
They took at the end of a draft from Rutgers, who ended up being the guy right away. I mean, that's what I see. I mean, I just see Pacheco number two, right?
Yeah.
Like they have two of these guys now, and I'm with you. I think it's unlikely that Pacheco plays 17 games in an NFL season. He's too violent a runner. Now you've got another one to mix in there. I love it. I agree with you. As we look around the NFL, Dan, and we get the week one opponent in the Ravens, it's the rematch, right, of the championship game. I think the Chiefs have gotten better. I think the Ravens have gotten better. Are they the biggest threat to you still, to the Chiefs this year, with Derrick Henry now there and another year of some talented young receivers and everything else they've been able to do?
You know, obviously it's the season hasn't even started yet, but from the outside looking in, yeah, I think so. I'm not sure what the Bengals are going to be this year. I'm certainly not sure what the Bills are going to be. I think the Bills are on this precipice where they may just fall over the edge trying to rebuild. And you know, certainly Josh Allen's a proven commodity, but the pieces around him keep changing, and they kind of leveraged the farm in these past few years to get there last year, and it didn't happen. So I think the Bills are a question. I again, you know, what we've seen out of the AFC is it's highly competitive. I've never really truly believed in the Dolphins. I kind of feel like they're a paper tiger. I don't think Tua is capable of getting them where they need to be. And so when you look at the AFC, I think the Chargers, especially being in our division, will be an interesting team to watch this year. I believe Jim Harbaugh is a very good football mind. I think he is an interesting and intriguing head coach. He's not a normal guy. He is a little bit of a character in that, but he's proven he can win. You know, he did it with the 49ers. He did it with Michigan. And I expect him that he is going to dramatically improve the Chargers, but I don't think they can do it all in 1 year. So for me, yeah, I think, you know, the Titans look better, but I still think the Ravens are probably the team to beat. Now, look, they could have run the football last year in that championship game and didn't. But the addition of Henry is just an anomaly of himself. I mean, he's the Aaron Donald, right, of offense, and so of running backs. And so I think that kind of bruising, powerful running, adding that to the Ravens game takes the pressure off Lamar, which I know Lamar Jackson was the MVP last year, but again, you know, we looked at Lamar going into that championship game, and he can make a throw straight down the field. What he has struggles with to do is to throw to the sidelines accurately. And so a quarterback that stands in the pocket, he did much better at staying in the pocket last year. But if you can't make that throw to the sidelines, it's a third of your game, you know, and you can't miss a third of your game and not have it affect your team. So I think the addition of Derrick Henry kind of offloads a little pressure off of Lamar Jackson, and that makes them a better team.
One more from me, Dan. I think we'd be remiss to not mention the new contract that Creed Humphrey signed a few days ago, and the fact that the Chiefs were able to lock him up. It's quite a bit of guaranteed money. I mean, clearly the Chiefs value having a center, the talent and the ability that Creed Humphrey has, and being able to have him be kind of the cornerstone piece, or at least one of the cornerstone pieces of that offensive line for years to come, tells me a lot about Brett Veach's priorities and you know, finding that money, being able to make that happen. I think speaks volumes to the value that Humphrey brings to the table.
Yeah, you know, Tommy, it's interesting. Along 10 years ago, 12 years ago, whatever it was, when Casey Wegman came back to the Chiefs, they immediately got better. And one of the things that I learned out of that is we somewhat, because it's not a pretty position, we somewhat undervalue the center position. However, I think it's so important, and I think it's one of those roles where you've got to protect your quarterback. You've got a $500 million quarterback back there, and the quickest way to get to him is right through the middle, a straight line, right? So shoring up those two guards and the center is really important. And I think it's you've also got Creed, who's calling out protections. There's a lot that goes into that. Again, it's not a glamorous position, but I really feel like the Chiefs, I think Veach understands the role there and the value there. And I think that's why you saw them go out and do this deal, because and Creed is so good at what he does, not to mention a good character and team player. You know, this isn't a guy who ever causes problems in any way, and he's just always there, always gets done. He's a hard worker, a studier. You know, that offensive line, man, it requires a lot of study and homework, and you have to know every single game what you're getting into, and Humphrey's proven he can do it. So let's lock him up for a number of years. Let's protect Patrick Mahomes the best we can.
Yeah, it was good. They got a couple more of those they need to get done.
Yeah, they do. Yeah.
Veach is finding ways to make it all work. Dan, we really appreciate it. We're glad to have you back on board this year of Sports Daily. We'll have the Chiefs Radio Network, of course, over on KNSS, some of the special coverage here on KFH. Next week, Dan, we'll be previewing. We'll be getting into the nitty-gritty on a Chiefs-Ravens rematch to get this thing going. We cannot wait.
Yeah, yes, it's going to be exciting. I tell you, they come out of the gates. We saw in preseason these teams were bringing their best. They want to beat the champs. That opener is going to be something, man.
Oh, I can't wait. I can't wait. We'll overanalyze it, and we'll make way too big a deal out of it, and it'll be awesome. It'll be fun. Dan, we appreciate it. Be good. Let's talk again next week.
You bet. Go Chiefs, guys.
There goes Dan Israel, executive producer of the Chiefs Radio Network. Glad to have Dan back on board with us here on Sports Daily. Back on the video capabilities we're bringing to the table now. Thanks to everybody tuning in right now, whether it's on 12 News Connected, Facebook, YouTube, or X. We appreciate you. However it is you want to get in the show, we're going to give you an opportunity now to jump in. The IHOP hotline back open for you at 869-1240. We'll come back. We'll look at the Royals game today. What do we think? Any bets, perhaps? I've been staying away a little bit. It's beginning a little more unpredictable for me, but we'll look at it. We'll analyze it and much more. CeeDee Lamb got his contract too, Tommy. Jerry Jones wins. Jerry Jones wins the standoff. I'll tell you what I mean when we return on Sports Day.
And 1240 KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Glad to be here with you. Let's give away some HTO. Now featuring just out the new fall lineup. You've got apple crisp dirty chai. You've got butter pecan mochas. It's big time for coffee drinkers. You can get one of those free coffees. Go try it out. You can also get a free iced tea, more than 20 flavors, by texting the keyword TTEA to the short code 20357. T20357. Good luck, everybody. You can enter once per day. Message and data rates apply. Lorenzen takes the bump tonight, Tommy, for the Royals, trying to secure a series win. The Royals are slight underdogs in this game. Gavin Williams is on the mound for Cleveland. He has not been particularly good. So another opportunity here for Kansas City to strike. We've said house money, and I still believe that. I think that they were fortunate, very fortunate yesterday. So I'm not like it all feels fine now. But it also is a game that they can win. Lorenzen has been, of all of the pitchers there, Lorenzen may have the most experience at getting into this portion of a season and being counted on that way. Like he may end up being the most consistent guy down the stretch here. That wouldn't surprise me at all.
I feel good about this matchup tonight, and Lorenzen has been pretty nails since coming to the Royals at the trade deadline. And his ERA overall for the season, even though he didn't pitch particularly well with the Rangers earlier in the season, his ERA overall for the entire year is under 3.5. It's still a pretty solid ERA overall, and it's been, of course, significantly better since he's been with the Royals. I think he's got a sub-2 ERA in his time with Kansas City and the few starts that he's had so far. So I feel good about him going to pitch tonight for the Royals. And then on the flip side, I think Lorenzen is a lot better than Gavin Williams, who's pitching tonight for the Guardians. Williams' ERA is up over 5. He's got a pretty high whip as well. And so from a pitching matchup perspective, I'm going to give it to Lorenzen tonight for sure.
Well, look, Lorenzen, what he did for Texas was just be what they needed him to be every time they needed him to be it. And I think that was the role, for the Royals that I initially envisioned. He's just going to come back. It's sort of like, it's funny about it. It's sort of like what you heard and thought they would get out of Urcik, right? This guy is a grinder. He's going to do whatever you ask of him and he'll be awesome. Well, what's happened? Urcik has ended up being nails as a closer, and Lorenzen is part of that. But what they need out of Lorenzen right now is for him to sort of stabilize things at a time when everybody's trying to get their sea legs a little bit. It's hard to imagine. And look, Lorenzen has not been lights out by any means. Last time out, he was very good, but it was against the Angels. He's been good, though. He's been consistent, and he's consistently taken them where they need to go. He's not going to get you probably past 6 innings. That's not what he's going to do. But he'll give you a chance to win the games. And if they can consistently get that out of all their starters, I think down the stretch, you'd take it, right? Like if you just, no duds allowed, right? No dud starts allowed. And I thought we were going to get one out of Reagan's yesterday, but he at least battled through that much of it. The Royals are in good shape right now, Tommy. They're a game back of Cleveland, which is, of course, what we've been focused on. But Minnesota's reeling. They're game and a half up now on Minnesota and 5 clear of Boston. So they do have some of that house money. It's spilling over. If you're going to be swaggy, go get a Cleveland starter that struggled. Put the pressure on Cleveland early. The Royals yesterday had the pressure put on them early. They responded twice, which is great to see. But go put some pressure on Cleveland early. You said you like them. Look, they're plus money tonight. If you want to look at it from a betting standpoint, you just take them on the money line. I mean, it's pretty simple. I probably wouldn't bet anything else. I would just, say Royals, I think it's like plus 130. Just take the Royals on the money line then. See if you can get them a win. I do too, by the way. I also don't want to overlook Cleveland and how good they've been all year long. And they had every opportunity to win the games that they didn't yesterday. But it should be a fun one today. Another story yesterday, Tommy. CeeDee Lamb, as we'll switch back to the NFL, gets his deal. I laughed the entire time I saw this because Jerry Jones won his little game of chicken. You saw the Justin Jefferson deal. CeeDee Lamb wanted to be the highest paid. Jerry Jones didn't want to make him the highest paid. And so CeeDee Lamb makes like $1 million less a year with just a handful of million under the total value. CeeDee gets paid a ton of money, but he does not get more than Justin Jefferson. And it feels like Jerry Jones gets the win, I guess. Is it a win there? Like in a negotiation, I think that's probably what this came down to. I know there were a lot of There were probably a lot. I've seen it multiple places from Cowboys beat writers. that predicted this in May. Oh, Justin Jefferson got his deal. CeeDee Lamb's going to get a deal right underneath that. And ultimately, that's what happens. But just why do we have to go through this exercise to get there? It's whatever. It's done deal now.
I mean, Jerry Jones may have won the battle, but I think he's losing the war. I mean, I think that's pretty easy to point out because so much attention has gone to, you know, his formerly, I'm guessing now formerly disgruntled wide receiver. I don't think, you know, CeeDee Lamb is disgruntled anymore after the payday, but so much attention went to that in figuring out that scenario and that situation that he, I mean, that was a guy that was already on your roster and you got to take care of him. It's not like there have been any kinds of reinforcements, which has been well documented for the Cowboys going into this season. So much, talk and emphasis and priority placed on situating the CeeDee Lamb whole scenario. And that's not all on Jerry Jones. That's on CeeDee Lamb also. But so much time was spent on that that, okay, great. You've got CeeDee Lamb back, but you already had him. So he may have won that battle, but overall it doesn't make the team any better. They're exactly the way they were before.
Well, I don't think it changes anything. I don't think they want to pay Dak like that. They wanted to pay CeeDee Lamb. It was just like this little standoff thing. I mean, and by the way, as a Cowboy fan, I am just fine with them saying, you know what, Dak, just play the year out and let's see what happens. That's what I would do. I mean, if I were them too. I mean, you're not going to cast Dak aside at this point, but just get out there and go play awesome. And if it's great and we think we can win next year, we'll bring you back. If not, good luck at your next stop. You'll go get paid a ton. I think that's the right call. But that's, you know, we're still waiting on Ja'Marr Chase a little bit. Ja'Marr Chase is a year. I think Ja'Marr Chase will play, and it's not that big a deal because he's kind of a year early on all this of when he needs this. So I would be surprised, but that's it, right? Like, we're not waiting on any more of these, are we now? It's just kind of Ja'Marr Chase, and that's the last one. Is that right?
That's the main one. That's still the main headliner that is holding out. I think there might be maybe a couple more, but not to the stature of Chase.
How's your fantasy preparation coming, Tommy? You ready for all this? CeeDee Lamb now, maybe a guy that people are taking at the top of the draft. They can breathe a little sigh of relief there.
Yeah, I mean, I think a little bit. I mean, you and I are in the middle of a draft that feels like it's taken about 4 months to finish with our buddy TJ Cleland and Brandon Zinner, I think, is in the league. There's a handful of other people that are in the league, and you and I are both in it, and this draft has taken forever. And so I'm glad, I'm looking forward to getting it done. Then I've got another one this weekend. I know you're in that league. You're not going to be at the draft though. And then I think I may have one more. I don't know. It's that season where I'm trying to keep track of all of it. And, it's tough to do.
Yeah, I can't wait. I'm going to Texas this weekend and I'm going to have, the one I'm not going to be at that I'm in with you, I think I will have over the course of 2 days about 5 drafts. And it's going to be incredible. And I cannot wait for it. We are fantasy football junkies. If you ever have questions about that kind of stuff, you can ask us. We'll help, even if we help you in the chats and not on the air, but we'll probably help you on the air. Why not? This portion of the program brought to you by Crestview Country Club. We appreciate Crestview's support. I'm going to pop out there, Tommy, right after we get off the air and try and play as many holes as I can in like an hour. It'd be the first run at doing that for me now that the kids are all in school before I go into the TV station tonight. Listen, I don't know how many I can play in an hour, but we're going to find out. I might be able to get 9 in. I think that's possible, but we'll give it a shot. We appreciate Crestview. It's 18 holes times two. Two 18-hole courses out there. These kinds of things are possible because they allow a lot of tee times during the afternoon.
I got to tell you, we went out there, my wife and boys and I went out there, I think it was Friday evening, and had dinner. And this is a little known fact about me. I don't know if we've talked about it much on the show. I am a chicken wing connoisseur. Love, love, love chicken wings. And I got their wings, and they were phenomenal. They were so good. And so that's definitely, I've had a kind of a hole in my life with chicken wings because I was a huge Buffalo Wings and Rings fan over at K96 in Greenwich, and they closed, I think, a couple of years ago. That was my favorite restaurant, and I haven't really found any place that can do anything like that. But you know what? Crestview's wings were right up there. They were really, really good.
They were. I actually had some when we went and played, what was it, whatever day that was, Friday. And it was the first time I'd had them. And I had thought the same thing. I was like, man, those are really good. So, yeah, I'm in on the wing. I just had regular buffalo. I haven't tried any of the other flavors. So, yeah, get out to Crestview. The restaurant's great. The golf's great. It's all out there for you. Check it out. We've got two giveaways going for you right now. If you want concert tickets to see Cody Jinks at Intrust Bank Arena, you can text the keyword Cody to 20357. If you would like to win some HTO iced tea and coffee, you can text the keyword T to the short code 20357. We are wide open in our final segment, our final segment when we return. So anything on the mind, we'll get to some other headlines. We've got Royals baseball tonight. It's all coming for you here. Sports Daily on a Tuesday. Glad to be back in the full groove of the fall sports season. We'll be right back.
.975 and 1240 KFH.
Welcome back in, everybody. Sports Daily here on KFH. Man, just saw the news, Tommy, here. Psycho Sid. You remember Psycho Sid, the pro wrestler? He died. 63 years old. Okay. You remember Psycho Sid?
I don't think so. Psycho Sid. I'm not sure that
big, humongous dude, curly blonde hair. He was a bit of a force there for a minute in the scheme of things. But sad to see him go. I see the Titans traded a quarterback. Have you been paying Malik Willis, who didn't get much of a chance there? We haven't talked since the preseason ended about all the rookie quarterbacks, and the Titans jumped to the forefront. Like, there's a chance that Will Levis is good. He is the least talked about of like the last 2 years. There have been so many guys taken. I know we've talked about the Titans doing a good job this offseason in bringing some people in. Of course, Calvin Ridley there now. I know they don't have Derrick Henry, but it's a totally new look on that roster. Are we all collectively sleeping on Will Levis? And it's not anything against Will Levis. It's because, right, we're excited about basically all the rookies that were taken this year. They've all looked pretty good. Spencer Rattler's had some run in New Orleans. Of course, we saw C.J. Stroud be really good last year. And here's Will Levis just sort of floating through. But every time I watch this guy play, I'm like, man, there's something there. I can't decide if I think he's going to be like really good but there is something there with him that just feels like he's gonna be something in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm not sure that we're sleeping on him. At least I don't think I'm sleeping on him at this point. I think really a lot of that is due to the fact that the team that he is playing for is in the middle of a rebuild, you know, and that's been made pretty clear that with a brand new coach and moving away from Derrick Henry and you're making a permanent change at quarterback. Ryan Tannehill is off the roster. I think all those things, you know, lead me to believe that they don't have a whole lot of hope that this season it's going to be, you know, they're going to be a playoff team or anything like that. I think that they are committed to rebuilding this organization. And whether or not that's Will Levis, the jury is still out. But I do think it's just as likely that he's a placeholder for now while they rebuild that franchise and then ultimately move in a different direction, you know, from him a year or two from now. That being said, he could absolutely, in my mind, change his fortunes and become that franchise quarterback for the Titans. I'm just not sure that I see that yet. Maybe at some point my mind will be changed on that. But at this point, he doesn't strike me as somebody that can lead the rebuild for the Titans. It's almost like they rebuild everything else and then decide if they want to keep him or if they want to move in a different direction.
You know what he reminds me of? And I don't mean the way that they play, but just like attitude. It's Baker Mayfield is who he keeps reminding me of. Like, just like that dude that, you know, is ready to go to war for you, which, you know, I don't know if you'd consider that a good ceiling or not. I think Baker Mayfield has had a much better career than a lot of people thought he would. But I saw they released Willis and that popped that into my head. Yesterday, we get, you know, sort of the beginning of a routine week for K-State, for KU. It's a game week. K-State talked on Monday. Chris Klieman. You know, all the stereotypical things that you think about. Both of these teams get going this week. Both of these teams shouldn't have much opposition in these games. We talked to Wyatt Thompson yesterday, and we'll get Tre Islada later this week too, and Tim Fitzgerald. What are you expecting in these first games? It's a little different for me than a lot of the first games like these, where you sort of expect a team to let off the gas. I kind of want to see a lot out of both quarterbacks. We talked about it with Avery Johnson, but the same thing exists to me for Jalen Daniels. At some point, don't you just have to turn him loose and say, get out there and get after it and just like full steam ahead, full strength, go?
Yeah, I think that you do, just to get the season off on a solid note. But at the same time, I don't think that it's going to be necessary really in any case for them to show everything. I think you can have really good and positive performances from both Jalen Daniels and Avery Johnson without really going very deep in the playbook at all. I think for KU, that's probably going to be more likely because they're playing Lindenwood, where UT Martin, I think, not that they're going to be a tougher test for Kansas State, but I do think that they're a higher caliber program overall than Lindenwood probably is. But I do think that, you can
assume so. I don't know anything about Lindenwood.
I think so, but I think you can see, do you get what I'm saying though? I think you can
see
good performances from both starting quarterbacks without them even really having to open the playbook up that much.
It's not even opening the playbook with Daniels for me. I just want to see him play. I want to see him play a lot. I want to see him run. I want to see him throw. I want to see him take a hit. Like all of it. Like Avery Johnson, it's more about becoming acclimated as the starting quarterback, right? I don't have any concern about Jalen Daniels being acclimated into being the starting quarterback. Like he's ready to be the starting quarterback. His is more physical because normally if a guy's nicked up or dinged up, you're like, I'll put him on ice, don't take the risk. But with not now to me with Jalen Daniels, because the last 2 years, it's been like this lingering, is he going to be able to play or is he not? Like, I just want to rip the Band-Aid off with him. I just want to see him go out and light it up, play the whole time, and be good, feel good, and be ready to come right back the next week.
The best Jalen Daniels in my mind is the Jalen Daniels that feels like he doesn't have to prove anything to anybody. And I'm kind of on that boat with him. I've seen Jalen Daniels be such a great quarterback and dynamic and game-breaking and all of that over the course of his career that I don't need him to prove anything to me. I really don't. If it's a situation where...
Not as far as his ability, where, no.
What I'm saying, though, is that Lance Leipold, there had been quite a bit of time where nobody was vocal about the health of Jalen Daniels, including his head coach and including Daniels himself. Nobody was talking about it, and it left so much up, so much open to speculation and, all of that, that now Leipold and Daniels, but specifically his head coach, have been very vocal about him being healthy entering this season. I believe them. And so he doesn't need to prove anything to me. I'm going into the season with the mindset that he's 100% perfectly healthy because the coach that didn't tell us, the coach that really was kind of like really trying to keep it quiet a season ago, is now very vocal about, yeah, he's healthy. So I don't need him to prove his health. I just need him to go out there and do what he's done over the course of his career when he's been out on the field.
Yeah, man, we just don't agree on that. I absolutely don't have any doubts about what he can do when he's out there. I just have doubts about his availability.
I just don't think that I don't think that at this point, like, I understand that the health history and everything from him. I don't think that he deserves the doubt. I don't think he needs to prove that he's healthy.
I don't think he deserves it, but I think he's earned it. I mean, we haven't seen him play much in the last 2 years. It is what it is. His back either feels great and it's good to go or it doesn't. Or it's re-aggravated. I think his back feels good to go.
I mean,
good enough to go, right? Like good enough to go because he says he's healthy. They're going to play.
I mean, good enough to go could very well mean that he's at 100%. We don't know that. What I'm saying is that things were shrouded in so much secrecy a year ago that I think it makes it that much more telling that everybody is vocal about how healthy he is going into this year. Because if he wasn't, I think it would be continuing that shroud of secrecy
and not really talking about it. Here's the example I would give. He went and did the same media day stuff and did all of that like right away. And then all of a sudden he's not playing full time. And they're like, well, yeah, he has been dealing with this back injury. So like up until this point, last year and this year are not all that different, right? And then all of a sudden we learned right early in the season that he'd been dealing with a back injury.
I don't think there was this like definitive, and maybe there weren't nearly as many questions, you know, going into last season as far as his health was concerned. I don't think that there were nearly as many, you know, speculation that he was going to be injured. I think that it was basically like it's a normal season, and then all of a sudden, you know, he hurt his back and things were pretty quiet around him.
But they told us he had been dealing with the back after he was missing time. It's fine. I hope for Jalen Daniels more than anybody else that he can come out and do it and just flex and just like scream, because there's nobody on the planet.
I want to see it too. I just don't think that he has to prove anything to you. I don't think that he has. I mean, I think an unfair assessment of what he can bring to the table for KU this year.
I know what he can bring to the table if he's healthy. And just after 2 years of being hurt, I'd like to see him be healthy. I don't think that's unreasonable. But we'll talk more about it with Shreyas Lada and see if he has any insight on that. That's coming later this week. One of the best players in college football, man. If he's rolling, they're going to be really good. All right, 869-1240 is that IHOP hotline. Put it on speed dial. We'll come back. We'll tell you what's on the network today and put a bow on this Tuesday of Sports Daily when we return.
In business, success is never by chance. You know that better than anyone. So why settle for a marketing agency that gambles with your money? At Scale Marketing, we've been in your shoes. Our founders successfully owned and operated businesses long before becoming marketers. They understand the business of, well, business. We specialize in performance marketing for mid-sized B2C companies with teams of over 100 people, from traditional and digital marketing to media buying, data science, and creative production. Scale Marketing manages it all. Our tailored strategies drive measurable growth, turning your challenges into opportunities.